Friends, you're welcome to Irish Radio Network, USA. On this, the first program for 2015, I am delighted to welcome somebody we know as a friend, and definitely a friend of the Irish community on both sides of the Atlantic, well-known figure in Northern Ireland. Let me welcome New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, and Controller, you're very welcome.
Adrian, thank you so much for having me once again on your show. It's an honor to start the new year off with you and your listeners, and let me congratulate you on your 45th year of broadcasting. That's really quite a great run, and I know there's many more years to come, so just thank you for what you do for all of us. You're really just a remarkable resource here in the greater New York region, and I just thank you for everything you do to keep everybody so informed about the important issues of the day.
Well, one of the important issues, by the way, thank you for that, but one of the important issues of the day was your overwhelming, triumphant election on November 4th, which again is it's a tribute to, you know, to what you're have been doing, you know, going back to 2007 and indeed long before.
Well, it was gratifying, and you know, what was a, you know, a tough election year for, you know, for for my party, for us to get 60% of the vote, and we really did very well in all parts of the state, upstate, Long Island, and the boroughs of New York City as well. So I feel it was a you know, a strong validation for the work that my team and I have been involved with, and it gave me a sense that, you know, although many people aren't always 100% sure what the state controller's office is all about, many more people, I think, have figured out what we do and value what we do. So, it really was very gratifying to have that vote of confidence, and, you know, we're working hard to continue to earn the confidence of New Yorkers. So thank you for mentioning that.
Now, also, you know, you have you've got a couple of aces up your sleeve, because this year, 35 years later, you know, you became the youngest political winner at age 18 when you, you know, the first one to hold New York, to hold a public office. And that's kind of... that ages you a little bit.
It ages me a lot. And actually, it's a little bit longer than 35 years now. But, you know, I think that's part of my continued optimism in the electoral process and in politics, is that, you know, I was still a senior in high school, Mineola, Long Island, and ran for a seat on the Board of Education. And, you know, at a time when many people were saying, you know, too many young people are, you know, not engaged constructively in trying to fight for change. You know, I took up, you know, the history lessons that my high school teacher gave us and the civic lessons. I said, all right, well, I'm going to put myself forward and say that I think I can help improve the situation here in the school system. And, you know, sure enough, people in Mineola, Wollaston Park, Albertson, Roslyn, Garden City Park, the neighborhoods that were in our school district, they decided to have confidence in me. So, you know, to be 18 and to have the community feel that I presented myself well and that I could make a difference, you know, when you have that kind of experience early in life, it gives you just a very optimistic point of view about being involved, being engaged. Adrian, I haven't won every election since then, but I've won many more than I've lost. And, you know, for me, the opportunity to serve in this position and when I served in the state legislature really is a gift. I mean, I have to say that at this point in my life, I have no regrets about choosing public service as my career, as my avocation. And, you know, I spent 10 years in the private sector working for a corporation, and I love that work as well. But the chance to make a difference, be constructive, hopefully do some good things along the way, you only get that with public service. And, you know, it's a privilege.
And actually, your background, you're a manager in the telecommunications industry.
Yeah, little company called AT&T.
that's right. Listen, it is it's a staggering for any of us, you know, reality that, you know, you get to manage the state's $180.7 billion pension fund. That's great, but it carries enormous responsibility. And as controller, you are the watchdog, and your job in auditing the spending practices of all the state agencies and local governments, and in fact overseeing the New York State and local retirements system, reviewing New York State and city budgets, is an area that most people would expect, well, as comptroller, there's no room for error. Is that staggering thing to wake up in the morning to and say, geez, somewhere in the midst of all my own staff and responsibilities here, you know, there's got to be a glitch hither and there. You know?
Well, and, you know, as Harry Truman said, the buck has to stop somewhere. It stops with the person that has the responsibility. But I benefit from having a really extraordinary team. And, you know, as I've often said to people, my job is not to be the expert in everything, right? I'm not sitting there reading the Wall Street Journal and investing the money. I have a skilled team that guides us on that. We do the audits of state agencies and local governments, public authorities. We have trained auditors that do that. The budget reviews that you mentioned for the city and the state, we have a budget and policy group that does that. Contract review, another big responsibility, making sure the state payments are done in an orderly and proper fashion. Our legal division, you go down a long list of our responsibilities. Yeah. I manage a good team, and my first challenge is to recruit and then hold on to smart people, experts in all of these areas. You know, you mentioned the pension fund. There are 1 million New Yorkers and their families who depend on the strength of that pension fund. Unfortunately, in New York, as opposed to many other states, we have a well-funded pension plan, one of the best in the country. And, you know, certainly when the markets go up and down, I would have to confess that, you know, sometimes I do lose a little bit of sleep over that, especially at the end of March, which is the time that we value the fund, and that's the number that we have then that goes into our calculations for what we charge our government employers. So there are some times of the year, Adrian, where it's a little more nerve-wracking, but again, I benefit from a great team, and we've gotten great results, especially with the pension fund. So I hope New Yorkers can rest easy knowing the job that we're doing, and most of the time I rest easy as well.
Now, on the last time you were on this program here, was to basically announce, and we chased you down to make sure that indeed that the report from Belfast in Northern Ireland was actually correct, because you were announcing a $15 million investment back in March in Crescent Capital, which was, it turned out to be the single largest investment by a state pension fund in Northern Ireland, the equity vehicle. Again, how did Crescent Capital, how did that work? How is it working?
Well, I think it's working well, and I had the chance, as you know, after Election Day, to personally visit in Belfast to meet and met with some of the Crescent Capital principals over here in this country. It was great to see them in their home turf of Belfast, and had the chance to see one of the businesses that we're invested in, to see meet with some of the other investments that are in the pipeline in the north of Ireland. And I was just pleased that after a number of years of having allocated money that we designated for investment in the north of Ireland, that we could actually see some of that $30 million, actually, that we had carved out,
right.
$15 million, as you point out, went to Crescent Capital, to see that money now being deployed on the ground, creating jobs, promoting opportunity. You know, when I first went to Northern Ireland in 2008, as part of the Invest Northern Ireland conference. Yeah. It was shortly after Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness had visited with me and asked me to come. I had such a sense of this new opportunity now that the peace process seemed to be taking hold for this great release of talent in Northern Ireland that had been waiting for the opportunity with some stability for investment to come in and for the economy to improve. And we wanted to be part of that process. Now, of course, what happened shortly after that is that you had the global financial crisis, which made it difficult, you know, everywhere in terms of the economy. Well, now that things have gotten better, you know, I'm just very pleased that, that we are now a partner with what's happening in Northern Ireland. So when we do an equity investment, what we're doing is making money for our pension fund, but also being part of planting seeds of investment opportunity in Northern Ireland, where there is an incredible talent pool, a young workforce, well-educated, and we certainly are committed to our investments working not only for us, but on the ground working in a way that is part of the regeneration and transformation of communities. We want to be sure that the investments that we are involved with are part of an equality agenda, and I think it's important, given the bond that we in New York have to Ireland and to Northern Ireland, we want to be part of the progress, and certainly capital coming in will help continue the progress, and so that's our goal of kind of getting that double bottom line, you know, doing well for our pension fund, but also doing some good things over there, and I'm just very impressed with the talent at Crescent Capital, you know, to source good investment opportunities, and the business people, you know, that we met with there, they are hungry for investment, and they have a lot of good things happening. I visited, you know, some of the other businesses in the Titanic Quarter and Bombardier. It's just an exciting time. Let's hope the political process doesn't get in the way of, you know, the economic progress that people are very engaged in.
Now, if you weren't surrounded by people like, you know, McBride principles, co-author, your advisor on Ireland there, Pat Doherty, and if you hadn't been consistently trucking with Martin O'Muellor, former mayor of Belfast, advisors might have said, this is not a great time to go because there's a lot of touch and go in Northern Ireland. Of course, you had, David Cameron, British Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, and Kenny going up to seal what they thought was going to be a deal, and still nothing came out of that. And so it was a rocky time for you actually to be there.
Well, and we met. I went to Dublin, and Pat Doherty was with me, and he's been such an important guide on these issues for us. We're fortunate to have him with us. As you know, he worked with New York City Controls Office for many years prior to joining us. We were in Dublin first. We met with some of the Irish government officials who obviously follow closely what's happening in the north. Yeah. Met with Gerry Adams as well, and then traveled to the north, and Martin O'Muellor is the biggest booster, and his optimism is contagious, and it's an important optimism for me to hear and to spend time with him. But, you know, we were there in November, and there was a strong sense that something needed to be done by the end of the year because of the politics, certainly in Great Britain and in Ireland as well. But it wasn't clear what was going to happen, and we met when we were there in the north with officials from the Northern Ireland government as well as some of the British officials as well. Right. And everybody seemed committed. And my message was a simple one. I defer to their collective expertise on how to resolve it, but that from my perspective as an American investor, we need this process to continue. We need stability as far as the government continuing to function and the parties still working together despite differences. Otherwise, there would not be a hospitable investment climate for us to deploy that other $15 million, you know, that we have waiting to be deployed in Northern Ireland. And I know that no one disagreed with what we said, and I hope they use that in some of their discussions, you know, behind closed doors to say, you know, the world is watching. We've made progress. we can't let this fall apart at this point. So I'm glad that, you know, as we saw over the past week or so, they were able to come up with an agreement to keep it going in the right direction. And there's more work to do.
Yeah.
You know, but at least it's continuing, and that's key.
But and also, I don't think we should in any way water down the deal which was made. You know, the historic deal made a couple of days before Christmas there, where in fact what looked like Mission Impossible. You know, around the time you were there, in fact, for months and months, that actually something that was unexpected did get resolved, and it had it needed you know, something like, again, a strong fiscal commitment. Was probably the deal breaker or deal maker at the end of the day.
Well, and obviously, you know, had it all fallen apart, in the worst case scenario, we're reverted to direct rule by Britain again. I don't think that's not anything that anybody wanted, starting with the British. So, although it required more money and commitment to come from. You know, from Britain, I think that to keep it all going, it was, I think, the deal maker, you know, as you said, it was very, very key. And I know that was when I met with Martin McGuinness, that was one of the key imperatives that was mm-hmm. everything that's gone on, and with the tremendous need that's still there in the North, to buy into the austerity agenda in the way that it happens in other parts of the UK is not something that was going to work in Northern Ireland. And I did have the chance, being in West Belfast and East Belfast, being with Protestants and with Catholics as well, that even with all the progress, there is still tremendous needs. There are too many people that haven't been able to get employment. So the need for social services and for that safety net is there. And you know, I think one of the great challenges is to keep some sense of hope. You know, I kept thinking about that wonderful champion, Inez McCormick, and I got to meet with her husband for a little bit. And her call always was for transforming the economy, not to leave anybody out, and that unless there was change on the ground, people were going to give up hope and revert to, you know, to the hurtful practices of the past. And I heard that, again, whether I was meeting with Protestants or with Catholics. So that's where keeping the economic fabric together, both in terms of promoting private investment, but also recognizing the need for safety net to still be there, I think it's key. I visited a very interesting center, the Skeno Center, where I met with some of the Protestant leaders, including people who have been involved, you know, with the Troubles, and mm-hmm. older generations saying, we don't want to see the next generation fall into what we fell into. So it's a very powerful reminder that the political process needs to continue, the support from the UK needs to continue, and American investors, I hope other pension funds and other investments will follow our lead and see the great opportunities there. And putting our money to work, being part of a positive change, I think that's what we all need to be engaged in to keep this process moving in the right direction.
You know, as a huge investor and somebody who comes into very politically sensitive area, you know, you from day one actually dealt with you know, all sides, unionists, nationalists, Protestant, Catholic, and you. You know, and I think you managed that very well. Just want to ask you, though, with respect to, for instance, on the equality issue, you know, you mentioned that you had visited there, Bombardier, which is, you know, historically won't say anti-Catholic, but definitely a company that has kind of ignored what is now a reality, in that the Catholic slash Protestant makeup is on par. Some would say that maybe the Catholic workforce might be even, you know, a little bit ahead. But when you go in to areas like Northern Ireland, is there a resentment that, you know, here's the Yank coming in telling us one more time what we should be doing?
Yeah. Well, there wasn't much of that. I mean, there was a little, you know, Marcin had me speak at the Aisling Awards dinner, and, you know, I gave that what I thought was a very positive talk, but I did, you know, remind the audience the importance of the McBride principles in terms of changing the dynamic in Northern Ireland and our commitment to continue to monitor the equality agenda. And one of the DUP folks who spoke after me took some exception to that. But that was minor. When we were at Bombardier, they've made progress. However, as you point out, I think they're all in their workforce is still now only about 17% Catholic, and it's so they made progress. They've plateaued out at a level that's way below what the labor pool is there in the Belfast area. So that's an area where we raised that in our meeting, and we're going to continue to follow up on it. It is a concern. They need to hear from us. I think that's we own stock in Bombardier, so that's another kind of investment role that we play besides the private equity role. We hold stock in a company like that. So for them to hear from us that we're watching and we're concerned, I'm hoping that has an impact for their numbers to now move up once again and not be plateaued out at that level.
It also brings us back, though, to McBride principles. And, you know, sometimes we have a tendency to think of McBride principles as something, as a singular event that happened way back then. But the truth of the matter is that the McBride principles are still very much intact. You know, in terms of definitely, you know, setting a standard, you know, setting a bar, and that can't be ignored.
Well, and we, by statute in New York, the State Controller's Office, we are required to annually monitor compliance with those principles with our portfolio companies. So for us, McBride is just part of the ongoing agenda of our work. And as you say, it is not a relic of the past. It's as relevant today, and I think it is important for us to keep that monitoring in place, again, so that, you know, we don't fall back to bad behavior, and the companies don't fall back to bad behavior. So I think it's as important today as it ever was.
Now, my guest friend is Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, the Comptroller of the State of New York. I want to ask you, though, Tom, about, you know, the issues that are beyond your control, or for that matter, any control. The assembly, by virtue of the new arrangements, the new deal which was worked out, a very contentious premise that Northern Ireland would set its own tax goals, which indeed are much more favorable than the rest of Britain. As you looked at Northern Ireland, and as you were, you know, there at a very, again, contentious time when it could have gone either way, what does that mean in terms of investment? As is well known, the corporate tax structure in the south of Ireland is a record 12.5%. Which is what, you know, Northern Ireland wanted to be at least on par with that. But how does that affect investment strategy?
Well, I think it will be helpful to encourage more corporations to want to be located in Northern Ireland. I mean, you know, they're on the same island to have two different corporate tax rates and a great disparity between the two of them. Obviously, that was a disincentive for investment in the north. So, you know, time will tell. But, you know, my expectation would be that this will be a strong positive and will help to encourage greater investment from the private and the corporate side. So I think that's an important win for Northern Ireland, and let's hope it's followed through on. I think it was very, very. It's going to be a very helpful development.
Now, do you see that as perhaps a thorny issue with respect to Southern Ireland, that actually now that the competition with respect to inward investment, is going to be actually changed?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was at Dublin, they have a lot going on there. They have their own contentious political environment, and when we were there, the issue of the water rates was particularly contentious and causing many spontaneous demonstrations. So, I don't think it should be a surprise to the Republic that the North would want to be on par. If it creates a more level playing field, it just means that those businesses that offer the quality opportunities, that those are going to be the ones that are more likely to get the investment and, in fact, to be sustainable in the long term. So I think making it a little more competitive, between the North and the South is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it'll just encourage more excellence as far as the business climate on all sides.
Right.
And again, given the talent and the human resources, the great education level, I think it's, and given the fact that, the South of Ireland is certainly pulling out very strongly from the global financial crisis. I think the short-term prospects are very positive for the economy across Ireland, whether it's north or south.
And that is new, and I think also that most people would agree that the island of Ireland, it makes it a sweet deal, so to speak, that there will be equity in terms of the tax rates there, and there's definitely enough incentive and there's enough interest, for inward investment, particularly from North America, to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've been bullish and positive on investing there from when I was there back in 2008, and again, now that we've gone past the difficulties of the global financial crisis, and now that we see continued political stability, certainly in the north and across Ireland, certainly digging out from a tough economic time, it's a great place to be invested, and it really gets back to the people. There's a tremendous resilience and commitment to making the economy work, and it's a young, well-educated workforce, and that's what you need if you're going to have any business be successful. And Ireland's got it, and it's really, I think, an exciting opportunity, for us to be a part of the economic story there. And I would encourage other investors, be they institutional investors like New York Common Retirement Fund or private business, look to Ireland. It's a great place, great landscape as far as an opportunity for economic growth.
Well, I think, though, that, and it has been well noted, that the fact that New York State, under your own leadership as comptroller, investing and continuing to invest in Northern Ireland, it will get the attention of many other pension funds, maybe some not as big as New York State, but it will. The carrot is there, and obviously it is a good benchmark for those who are wondering, well, I don't know, is this a good deal or not? If it's led by New York State, that says a lot.
Well, I hope so, and that's why I wanted to go there personally, to be able to give my own witness and testimony that I saw it up close and saw our money being put to good work, and I really have a lot of confidence in the businesses that we're investing in, and I'm hoping that we'll have some more announcements in the near future about more of our money going there for investment, and I'm hoping that will be that carrot and that incentive, as you point out, for others to follow.
Now, again, we are obviously extremely interested and happy about your role in terms of managing that 180 plus billion in pension funds. But that's part of your overall job. As we, as New Yorkers, and as we, as we hear and get the mixed reviews with respect to the state of New York, the city of New York, the high tax rates, constant bickering with respect to, and the negative publicity that we see a lot of times in terms of New York State, New York City, lovely place but wildly expensive, and that comes under you as an overseer, and as an auditor for New York State, how do you think we are as we head into now a new year?
Well, New York, from a budget perspective, is in better shape than it's been in a long time. I give credit to the governor and the legislature for being smarter about the budgets at the front end as far as more realistic revenue estimates. You point out, though, there are still issues of, cost of living, of tax level. One of the challenges that I have as controller is I don't have any policy role. I can't decide, where the money should go or what the laws should be or what we should change. Our role is, as you point out, the oversight role. So when the legislature and the governor come up with a program or they fund, an agency, we, in the controls office, our responsibility is to make sure the money is being spent as intended and to root out any waste or fraud or abuse. So, our role is a little different, plays out differently than the policy perspective. But, I think with all the challenges that we have in New York, this is still the place that people want to be. Young people from all across the country want to be here. We are still the gateway of immigration to this country, and obviously the immigrant communities reinforce our strength and vitality, especially in the greater New York City area. So, I'm not one that looks at the glass, being half empty. It's really more than half full, and we have many more positives than negatives. And, we're just going to fulfill our role to make sure that the money's being spent appropriately. We keep the long-term view. We leave it to the governor and the legislators to do the day-to-day partisan battles. We're above that fray, but that's why our office is set up the way that it is. But I tell anybody, New York City, New York State, great places, great communities, and with all our challenges, we are still the capital, for the world, in with the arts, with finance, in so many different categories. So I have a very positive perspective on where New York is at in terms of its budget. The economy is getting better. The unemployment rate continues to go down. Is it perfect? No. We have our own areas of need. Many communities, even downstate, and certainly many of the communities upstate, are not back to where they were, before the recession hit. So we have our work cut out for us. But, New Yorkers are tough and strong, and I think we're headed in the right direction.
Finally, let me ask you about the U.S. economy in general. And I preface that by saying that, we hear from the highest levels and from the president across the country that, we are doing much better, that things are heading in the right direction, and yet we see that a lot of people in the middle class, if we can just point that out, are saying, well, I don't know what everybody's talking about because we're not doing any better than we have been. I know that's a ticklish issue, but what's your own perspective on, say, on the United States and where we're at?
Well, I mean, again, keep in mind how low we were, when President Obama took over. I mean, we really were in the beginnings of a horrible recessionary time, and we're certainly much stronger today. Again, unemployment nationally, like in New York, continues to go down. Stock market, for those who are invested there, is at record highs. The problem is, as you point out, Adrian, though, people don't feel it. And certainly for the middle class, where, the various reports show that, the household income or buying power is pretty much stagnant at this point, that certainly is not giving people great comfort, and you still have that issue of the upper end of the economic spectrum seems to do better and better, and while those in the middle certainly perceive they're doing worse, or even when you look at the studies, are stalled. You know, they're stagnant. So, you know, the challenge for us now is how do we keep the economy moving in the right direction, but see that the prosperity that many of the numbers indicate has an impact on the middle class. And you need that, because the middle class is the engine for the economy. And the reality is it's the ability of the middle class to, you know, to buy the automobiles, to buy the appliances, consumer spending, to put money aside for retirement so they're not dependent on government in their later years, to be able to put money aside for education, for themselves, for their children, for their grandchildren. I mean, that's what really fuels the long-term sustainable prosperity. And there clearly are issues there, and there are challenges there. So again, I think you need to look at where we were at just a few years ago when Wall Street tanked and took everybody else down with them. We still have more work for us to do to see that the middle class stays as strong and continues to be the backbone of this economy. And I just hope with the changes in Washington, frankly, some of them I wasn't happy with in the last election, but I hope there'll be a spirit of wanting to work together, bipartisanship, put aside differences. The gridlock in Washington does not help us move a positive agenda forward. So I'm hoping 2015 will be a year of more conciliation. Maybe the coming together in Northern Ireland will be a model for what should be happening in Washington, because there are too many people hurting out there, and there are many poor people that aren't even in the middle class that are suffering. So we still have a lot of big issues out there, but we're in better shape than we've been in a number of years. Let's keep that progress going.
I thank you very much for joining us and for being the bearer of good news, and also your continued interest in Northern Ireland. Now, strictly on a personal level and on family matters, our this interview wouldn't, you know, be worth a sixpenny bit were we not to acknowledge, you know, Mineola, the Sheridan Gasuski families, you know, the DiNapoli family. Your father, by the way,
age
90?
90 years old, yep. Still lives in the house that he and my mom built after the war, after he came back, after they got married, where I grew up. And he's right off of Willis Avenue, not far from the Irish Center there on Willis Avenue.
The Gasuski, the Sheridan Gasuski family, Anya's sister, and her family and neighbors out there are, you know, very familiar with, and I suppose it goes back to your father's time. Your roots and the DiNapoli roots are very much. Entrenched in Nassau County, and in particular in that area.
It was a great place to grow up, and I live not too far from there. Still in North Hempstead, I live in Great Neck now, but it's just a great area, and it's home for me, and I'm just proud that I continue to feel connected to that community in a very special way.
All right, well, now we've covered all of it, because, as I say, had we not mentioned that, this entire interview would have gone down very poorly.
Well, Adrian, again, healthy and happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
And to all your listeners, and I'll look forward to giving you a future update, and hopefully with some more good news about more investments of New York pension money in Northern Ireland.
Okay, thank you, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, Friends New York State Comptroller, and it can be a well-documented great supporter and friend of Ireland. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.